UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome. Our topic today is parathyroid disease, and my guest is Dr. Herbert Chen. He's the chairman in the Department of Surgery at UAB Medicine and Surgeon-in-Chief. Dr. Chen, explain a little bit about the parathyroid. Tell us about the different types of disorders that you see and how they're classified.
Sure. Everyone is born with at least four parathyroid glands, which live in your neck, and they're called parathyroids because they're near the thyroid, but they really have nothing to do with the thyroid. Their job is to regulate the levels of calcium in your body. And what happens in hyperparathyroidism is one or more of the parathyroid glands develops a tumor inside of it, which causes the body to release calcium from your bones into your blood, causing you to develop many symptoms from the high levels of calcium in your blood. There are various types of hyperparathyroidism. By far, the most common is primary hyperparathyroidism, which tends to happen in people usually around somewhere between their 50s and 70s. The other types of hyperparathyroidism called secondary and tertiary typically happen if you have a medical problem such as kidney failure, but they're far less common.
Are these serious diseases, and has parathyroid disease become milder over the years?
Well, I think what in our research, in our endocrine surgery area, we've done a lot of research into hyperparathyroidism. And we know that, one, it's the third most common endocrine disorder after diabetes and thyroid disease. But it's very much unrecognized by most physicians. Hyperparathyroidism is a big cause of fatigue, osteoporosis, difficulty concentrating. There's so many symptoms such as kidney stones that can be caused by this. And really, hyperparathyroidism impacts quality of life, how long you live, and a whole bunch of things. And so I think now we're trying to get the message out that this is something that doctors should be looking for. And just in the study done, which we recently published, we found that most patients who the most common way people present with this is that a high calcium level is found on a routine lab, and our research has shown that in only about a third of the time is it ever investigated or worked up. And so we feel there are so many people suffering from this disorder that remain undiagnosed.
So tell us a little bit about some conditions that can lead to hyperparathyroidism. And you mentioned calcium, but is that all? Do they always go together? Do high calcium levels always indicate parathyroid disorders?
Well, that's a great question. Hyperparathyroidism is the most common or the number one cause of high levels of calcium in the blood. And so that's how it's often discovered. But there are some patients who's with hyperparathyroidism whose calcium levels are only mildly elevated or intermittently elevated. And that's one of the reasons why the diagnosis is missed, is because sometimes the lab work does not detect it on the first blood test. But the disease itself can present in a number of ways. Common presentations include kidney stones, abdominal pain, patients who have frequent urination or constipation. But almost all patients with hyperparathyroidism suffer from fatigue and what they call as brain fog or inability to think. And so if I could give one message out to primary care providers is that when you do have a patient who is complaining of fatigue or difficulty concentrating, hyperparathyroidism should definitely be on the list to look for.
Dr. Chen, does how high the calcium level is, does that correlate with how severe symptoms might be in somebody with this condition?
So quite ironically, you would think the higher the level, the more symptomatic patients would be. However, our research and research from others have shown it's actually the patients who have only mild elevated levels actually have more symptoms than those with high levels. And in fact, if you measure the quality of life in patients who have mildly high levels versus very high levels, the mildly high patients have a worse quality of life, and they have the most improvement after surgery.
Wow. So what would you like providers to know about treatment options and, you know, even which patient selection criteria? Because there can be some adverse effects of treatment. It can change the quality of life for patients. So speak about treatment options and patient selection.
Sure. So the only curative treatment for hyperparathyroidism is surgery. And fortunately, the operation that we recommend is called a minimally invasive parathyroidectomy. It's a very safe outpatient procedure, which takes us less than an hour to perform. The patients go home the same day, and when they go home, they're eating, drinking, talking, doing the things they normally need to do. And many of them don't even take any pain medication after the operation. So it's a very, what we call one of those minimally invasive procedures where the patients recover very quickly, but they can have a huge impact on their life. And so what we recommend is once the diagnosis is made, we would like providers just to have them meet us. So we, I think as surgeons, we're in the best position to tell them what the surgery is like and what the potential risks and benefits, and have a discussion with them if it is in their best interest to pursue surgery.
And then what is life like for the patient afterward? What changes before and after the surgery?
Well, if the patient has a whole host of symptoms in our research, and just from talking to patients every day that we do this procedure on, they feel better. And if they have osteoporosis, there's improvement in that. But remarkably, people will have the surgery and they will tell me that it has changed their lives. And because of the underdiagnosis, we have so many people that actually self-refer to us because they have these symptoms, and they get their primary care providers to check their labs. They find the diagnosis, and they self-refer to us because they hear from other patients how this can drastically improve quality of life, performance, thinking, a whole bunch of other things that we haven't spoken about. Is hyperparathyroidism can cause insomnia, reflux, and abdominal pain. And so there's a whole host of things that can get better after the operation.
Is there a link between hyperparathyroidism and the risk of developing certain cancers?
Well, fortunately, in most cases, the tumors that form in the parathyroid glands, which cause hyperparathyroidism, are almost always benign. They're very rarely cancer. And so for most patients with hyperparathyroidism, the cancer word is not even part of the discussion. However, hyperparathyroidism can be associated with other inherited disorders, such as tumors or cancers of the pancreas, tumors of the pituitary, and so and those tend to run in families. But for by far the most common scenario for hyperparathyroidism is a benign tumor.
And what are some of the long-term monitoring advice that you would like other providers to have after somebody has gone through the procedure for their hyperparathyroidism? And what would you like them to know about long-term monitoring?
So after the surgery, basically we recommend that the patients, if they've had osteoporosis or osteopenia to begin with, we put them on a regimen to take calcium and rebuild some of the calcium that they've lost. Because ironically is what happens if you have osteoporosis due to hyperparathyroidism, taking extra calcium, doing anything is not going to help because the hyperparathyroidism is the driving force. And then we recommend after the surgery has happened to make sure you take enough calcium in your diet to replace the calcium that your bones have lost. And then we check calcium and parathyroid hormone levels annually because about 5% of patients can have the disease come back.
That's so interesting. So if it comes back, how would they know? Is there, if they're going to a primary care provider and they're monitoring, what should they be looking for?
Well, if the disease comes back, generally, if they had symptoms to begin with, they usually have the same symptoms. So often the patient's symptoms come back and then they go to their doctor and they get tested and it's back. Occasionally, they don't, just it's the routine lab follow-up that they see the levels go up again. And that's an indication that another tumor has developed. But like I said, this doesn't happen in most patients. Most patients who have this disorder have one operation to take, usually one tumor out, and they're good for the rest of their life.
Wrap it up for us, Dr. Chen, with your best information and advice about the comorbidities that can go along with hyperparathyroidism, what you want other providers to know about recognizing those signs and symptoms and monitoring their patients, and when to refer to the specialists at UAB Medicine.
Well, I think that to reiterate, hyperparathyroidism is the third most common endocrine disorder. It's the most common cause of high calcium levels in the blood. And we have a very safe outpatient operation which can improve the quality of life in patients. Now, I think if we had a pill that could cure this, people would get treatment for it, definitely. And they'd be more willing. But because it's surgery, there's a little apprehension to consider sending someone for an operation if they're not feeling so bad or they don't recognize it. But it's very common for me to hear patients, even if they don't, perceive feeling bad, they have the procedure and they tell us that we've changed their lives. So I do think you can make a big difference in the functionality of someone, how they feel, how much energy they have with a simple operation.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chen. As always, you are a wonderful guest, and thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise with us today. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.